This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
Do you actually need a camera for tout, or is it like part of the program?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
I'm just kidding. The man you see and
the place to be. Do you listen at all when I speak on the show?
I'm not the one who thrives on whining about carriages that are 3 inches from my fucking car.
So if it's too much for you and your big cock of the walk Knights of Columbus fat cat,
when does it end, JR?
Bring the carriage back to the fucking thing, then what do you want? What do you want?
When does it end?
Making the poor guy making minimum wage while you're sitting there with our mento going through the coffers.
Party people in the place to be.
5 years. 5 years we've been doing podcasts. And we have this. This is trash.
It's not Austin in L.A. It's not Cabana in Chicago. It's not Conrad down in Alabama. Place to Be Nation presents Scott Criscolo and JT Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this Monday evening, as always, inside the PTBN studios. And joining me here tonight, let's get right into it. Scott Criscolo, how are you?
Good evening, JR!
I was trying to think of that Bodine song. What song is that? Everyone
Closer to Free?
Yeah.
Or whatever that song was on. Welcome PTB Nation to episode 502 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. And another Monday. It finally feels like fall, although I heard, I don't know if you're one of those, because I know you and I always discuss weather and meteorology and stuff. I know that the Farmer's Almanac always said that every winter we're going to get 900 inches, but I read somewhere today that we actually have, for once, a somewhat mild winter. I don't know what that means. Hmm. Maybe we don't have to deal with shoveling and
yeah, right.
Fucking,
well, Gene needs a new person, so
that's true.
But anyway, so here we are tonight, and why don't we go to bring our third man, and we'll talk about our weekend because I hung out with him for part of it, and he wanted to be on the show here tonight because he was live in the arena on the evening of the house show we're talking about here tonight, and that is of course the one and only. You heard him on our last episode and millions of others. John D'Amato, John, how are you?
Yes, boys. Halloween is next week, so I guess it's a good time to have your favorite ghoul enter the studio and join you guys. Thank you. And yes, tonight we're going to spend the night reminiscing like one of your favorite Yacht Rock band's favorite tune, the Little River Band.
Yes. Can't wait to see them. I'm going to see Yacht Rock Review live Thursday night, by the way. I am pumped up.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
and I'm seeing LRB in Long Island next week. The old fucks are still cranking. Yeah.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it quite a bit. So it should be fun. And speaking of shows, though, John, we were at one last night, WWE Super Show, house show in Boston. It was originally supposed to be a pay-per-view, and then it got changed to when they moved TLC to December to accommodate these other glut of shows that are going on. It just became a super show. It was an interesting show. I guess before that, should we talk about the meat feast we had in the afternoon?
Oh my God! Yes, I'm still recovering.
Really?
Sodium overdose.
No boneheads?
No. We friends of mine that do open house. They say every Sunday for football. I took John there yesterday, and it was Italian. Every week they do a different food theme. This week was Italian, and they go all out. So we watched the early games there, and we loaded up. Yeah, it was Big Daddy Sitch, as John kept calling himself, was going in hard.
Oh, my God. Lots of meats and cheeses.
Oh, tremendous. It was a lot, yeah. So we watched that. We left it around, 4:30? Got a Dell's. We hadn't eaten enough. One last one for the season. The poor guy was like, what the fuck? What are you doing here?
We were the only two customers all day, probably, that poor
guy. That's fantastic.
So we grabbed the Dell's, drove out to Boston. It was interesting because it was – what do you think, John? Maybe – it was under half full. I don't want to go as low as a third. I don't know. Maybe a third. The whole upper deck was closed.
Yeah.
Really? They tarped it?
Wow. Well, it wasn't tarped.
They didn't even tarp it. They just, it was just empty. They just,
wow.
They didn't need to sell seats. So, yeah, we took a walk around there, and the security's like, hey, you guys don't have seats up here, don't you? We're like, no.
We'd be the only ones. But I'll say this, for a half, you know, more than half empty arena, like the crowd was super into the show. It was loud, louder than some like pay-per-views where it's full that we've been to of late. So that was cool. It was definitely unique going to a house show. I hadn't been to one in a while. We were with the Cowboy's nephew and his friend, so they were super into it. And we had a family in front of us that were all fired up. So it was a good time. It was kind of cool to just be relaxed and just like kind of watch wrestling and not, you know, you don't have the snarky crowd chants. You don't have all the bullshit. So it's just like match after match. The guys are working hard. And the best match of the night, I thought, and John, if you agree, was the tag Ziggler and McIntyre against the Shield. I thought that was even better than the main event, which was a cool match on paper. But, you know, obviously we weren't going to get what they could deliver on a bigger stage, which is Nakamura, AJ, and Bryan was the main event.
Oh.
Do you agree that the tag was best?
Yeah. Yeah, relaxed was the key word. You didn't have to worry about, like, a bad booking decision causing Twitter to blow up. And, right. You know, a bunch of people saying, how can you idiots go to, you know, a show like that with stupid booking like that? And it was all relaxed. It's definitely for the kids, the house shows. But we had a great time. We made the best of it.
Yeah, no, it was fun just to chill and, you know, talking fantasy. So Mr. Bayless, he came last edition. Andy Flanagan had a bail on us, so Brian was able to sneak over to Boston.
Very nice.
Yeah, he came over.
Yeah, yeah. It's always great to get inside the Garden. We were right underneath the banners, and I was just admiring how they have so many like great Celtics. They have to put like all 50 numbers on like two sheets of on two sheets
I know,
of
right?
shitty paper. unlike our four great, you know, Knicks or whatever, or you know, 10 great that before that played in 1920s, that they at least had the whole jersey.
And Patrick,
yeah, but the Celtics and Bruins a little cheesy, but at least the championship band is a nice too.
So we'll use that to segue because the main event originally that we thought Joe we were getting last night, John, was Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns.
Right.
And it didn't happen. And there were a few other swaps that we thought we were getting. Like Rey Mysterio was going to maybe be there, and he wasn't because he was in Hartford the night before. So there were a few things that kind of went against what we originally thought. And we just figured, okay, well, they just weren't going to have the match and whatever. And, of course, with Braun kind of haphazardly turning face again last week, we're kind of like, well, who knows what's going on. And then we find out tonight when Raw opens that Roman Reigns comes out and announces that after 11 years of remission, he is battling leukemia for the second time in his life. Pretty much shocked everybody because this thing has been completely under wraps. I mean, WWE did not leak. Like, there's been no leaks or mention of this at all, ever. So he comes out. He's relinquishing the title, going off to fight that. He says he'll beat it and come back someday, which obviously we all hope he will. You know, regardless of booking and him as a wrestler or whatever, I think everybody can agree. Good dude. Doesn't deserve an ounce of this and wish him absolutely nothing but the best. It's a shit draw. A guy in his prime, you know, young, great shape, millionaire, you know, just like on top of the world and just gets cut down by this, which sucks. So hopefully he'll defeat that, come back soon. But it was definitely a shocking open tonight. And it obviously explains why he didn't wrestle last night, Sean, and probably explains why they put Braun Strowman back to be in the face as well to help fill the void that they're going to have.
Never mind the wrestling aspect. It's just he's always a great family man. Everything that you hear about him behind the scenes is how he just does everything for his family, and you just hope the best for him because there's always a small chance with something like this that the worst could happen. So we just say our prayers.
I mean, this has got to be one of the most devastating. Announcements, I think, in the history. I mean, when you talk about like live moments, I mean, we're not going to compare. It'd be unfair to do that. Talk about, you know, Owen and Eddie and things like that and Pillman, but I mean, this is. I mean, legitimately, regardless of the theme, this goes up here as one of the most gut punch moment live moments in wrestling history. I mean, I know people who've battled leukemia who have succeeded and sadly failed. I mean, Reigns 11 years to keep it hidden and be in that good a shape. I mean, that
I'd like to think that's a positive. Maybe they've been monitoring it, and maybe he's just got to do something that's more intensive that doesn't allow him to go on the road. I mean, fortunately, we don't know the details. It might just be radiation or maybe chemo. Who knows? But again, this is a guy who's not in terrible shape by any stretch. So obviously we say prayers for him and his family, and forget the fact, who cares about this? I mean, this is just this. I'm sure the company will take care of him. And you know, they've taken care of guys in fucking rehab. I'm sure they'll help Reigns out with, you know, radiation or whatever. It's sad because this guy, and we've talked about it on all of our shows, mm-hmm. here and Main Event and, you know, No Holds Barred and all, you know, all the shows that we've had the last few years. This guy has just gotten kneed in the nuts over and over and over again, most of the time for no reason at all and no fault of his own. One of the most vilified guys in the last like 3 years, pretty much for no reason, you know, in terms of his own doing. I mean, whether the company overbooked him or put him in shitty spots or whatever, the guy went out there and did everything that was asked of him. And say what you want about promos or whatever, the guy never put on a bad match. He always gave 100%. And it's sad. It's really sad. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be away for a while and away from what he loves to do. And guys like you look at Ambrose and Rollins. I mean, they're like they're the crew. You know, that's like the clique, you know. Just imagine in 1995 if Sean or Scott Hall said he had leukemia. I mean, that'd be just all those guys. It's been terrible. So, we say our prayers and we hope he's back healthy mm-hmm. as a human. Whether he wrestles again is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. It's just that he's back and healthy again. So, we'll get more into it on our other shows here on the Place to Be Nation Network, but. We needed to talk about it because that kind of threw kind of like I was in the car and our chat just started fucking flipping out. And I'm like, everyone's like, wow, shit. Oh, my God. Wow. Intense. And you finally go, what the hell is everybody talking about? It's like nobody was saying what the hell was going on. It was crazy.
Well, yeah, I didn't have it on. Like I had it.
I didn't either.
Off, yeah. And I'm like, well, I was waiting for you guys. And I was like, all right, well, let me throw it on. And I could, right as like Roman came up, I saw the first message pop up that was like, holy shit, what's that? And I just thought maybe he was like injured because that was the rumor. There was, you know, talk about the Saudi show and someone said, oh, maybe it's getting, there was a rumor out there it was getting, you know, tight for them to have it because Roman was injured. That was the rumor. And they're like, okay, well, so when I first saw someone say, holy shit, I can't believe it. And I saw him in the ring looking kind of somber, I figured, oh, you know, torn muscle or something and he's done for a bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, I started to see the other stuff pop up. I was like, oh, shit, this is not good. So, yeah, no, best of luck to Reigns. Hopefully, you know, he comes back stronger. And like you said, even beyond his wrestling, this is as a person, as a quality of life, hopefully he gets by this and defeats it yet again. So there you go. Best of luck to Roman. We'll miss you. But do what you're going to do to get healthy.
Exactly. And all right, so speaking of house shows, and you guys were at one last night, and we'll get more into that maybe next week on Main Event, and I know you guys on No Holds Barred talk about that house show because I guess there was stories that it was being filmed last night as some mm-hmm. sort of experiment for future network stuff. But check out all of our shows, Main Event, No Holds Barred, all the other shows here on the Place Be Nation Wrestling Network, and we'll get more into that too as well, that and Roman Reigns. But anyway, let's turn back the clock as Mr. D'Amato goes back to his childhood to...
Actually, one other piece of news before we jump in. We're busy tonight. Also want to mention a big congratulations to our buddy Derek LaRue, who got married over the past few weeks. Obviously, most of you older fans will know Derek. He was around for a big part of the show for a while before he kind of moved on to other endeavors. You might have heard him pop up on episode 500 a month ago. Mm-hmm. That was cool to have him back in there for a bit. So best of luck and continued happiness to Derek and his new wife.
It seemed like they were engaged for like 11 years.
They were. It's been a while. But it's good to see them close that out and move on to the next phase. So good for them.
Exactly. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, now we
can. Congrats, D-Ray.
Yeah, congrats, D-Ray. Maybe you think Christian Calloway presided over it and The Rock was his best man.
His fantasy book.
The contract negotiations went well. Yes. All right. Anyway, the date is October 24th, 1988. back from our back in our old office on 33rd, otherwise known as Madison Square Garden, New York City, and Mr. D'Amato was in the house on this evening. How much was the ticket? Do you remember?
Did it break $100?
Probably a short. It was probably a short 20.
Yeah, most likely.
And thanks for the compliment, Scott. Saying we go back to my childhood. That's great. unfortunately, I was 21.
So. Come on, man. I was trying to help you there.
I think Logan Crosland just turned 21, so that has. I don't know how makes you feel, but
eventually your PIC is going to blow it up. So I'll do it before him, man.
There you go. All right. Any event, Mr. D'Amato, this is what you were missing on that. There's only one other house show on this evening. It was a Monday, by the way. We're back to, after having the weird Thursday show last month, we're back to Monday. The other show on this evening, near the in their general old stomping grounds for the WWF, they were at the Hershey Park Arena in Hershey, Pennsylvania, where the air smells like chocolate. Only 2,100. That wasn't really a big building anyway. It's really old. That's now since knocked down. The Giant Center is in Hershey now. Here is your card. Terry Taylor and Sam Houston, who we saw last month. Remember that great match? Well, this one was a draw.
Oh, God.
Do we really want to know how long it probably was?
Taylor going down the friggin' food chain now, wrestling draws with Sam Houston.
And apparently, according to our good friend, Mr. Graham Cawthon in the history of WWE.com, he may have already started his new gimmick, which we'll get into down the line. The Barbarian pinned Boris Zukov. Bad News Brown defeated Ken Patera. Our Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior, defeated the Honky Tonk Man via disqualification. Brutus Beefcake defeated Ron Bass. Kurt Hennig, under his persona, which we'll talk about down the line, defeated Scott Casey. And in the main event, Hulk Hogan defeated King Haku.
Hmm.
We're talking about Haku and shitty opponents. Only had a, chance right there. I'm sure it actually wasn't. It probably wasn't a bad match, actually. So. All right, JR, any other notes we have?
On the 10-188 episode of Superstars, Gene Okerlund conducted an interview with Ted DiBiase and Bobby Heenan, where DiBiase announced he had purchased Hercules, the contract, from Bobby Heenan to be his slave. Moments later, Hercules was about to attack Heenan, but was jumped from behind by DiBiase and Virgil before Hercules eventually cleared both men from the platform. We'll talk much more about that as we move along. 10-8-88 Superstars, during installment of the Brother Love Show, Bobby Heenan announced that Terry Taylor was now part of his family, claiming he would take an average wrestler and make him a star. From here on out, the Brother Love Show was moved to Superstars, switching from its original home on Wrestling Challenge. 10-15 Superstars, Terry Taylor wrestled for the first time as a Red Rooster, defeating Lanny Poffo, and this was a gimmick that Heenan had given Terry Taylor to prove he could kind of take this bum, give him this gimmick, and still make him a winner. So they're basically admitting that he sucks in a way, and it's a goofy gimmick, and Bobby's going to make it work anyway. So there you go. On 10-22, Hulk Hogan was a guest of the Burlow Show. He was interrupted by the Big Boss Man and Slick. Boss Man assaulted Hogan with his nightstick, handcuffed him to a separate guardrail until Hogan was able to chase Boss Man and Slick away with the guardrail in one hand and the nightstick in the other, starting a huge feud for Boss Man, who we've really seen him just kind of work his way up the ladder since, like, July when he popped up. And all of a sudden now, like, those months of build and just establishing him as a beast, beating up all these low-end guys, is just shuttled right into a big-time feud. So also making the debut on TV that weekend were Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard, defeating Tommy Angel and Bob Emery. Prior to the bout, Bobby Heenan revealed that they were also the newest members of the Heenan family, billing them as the Brain Busters. So we're seeing a little bit of turnover in the Heenan family with some new members, Terry Taylor and the Brainbusters joining up. So kind of restocking a bit, I guess, with Hercules going. Is this the most bloated his family's been in a while? So we got Rude. We got Andre still. You got the Brainbusters. You got Terry Taylor. You got Haku. Another guy will be coming back soon. Is reunited with Heenan. Harley Race. He'll be back. Is that everyone?
Yeah, I think so. Trying to think of the other heels.
And who has he left? Has he lost anyone besides Hercules too? So it feels like he's just picked up guys, but not really shed many. Like he basically just added three and only lost one.
Yeah, I don't think. Let me think. Bombass, Casey, Lucky, Ben, Garza, Zukov. He's no. No, I think that's it for the moment. I mean, it thins out a little bit more. In '89, and he ends up having a pretty tight
right.
Pretty tight ship in 89, but I think that is pretty much it. Right, John? There's nobody else, right? That's pretty much it.
Yeah, I think you got everybody.
Yeah, I don't think it definitely streamlines when we get to 89.
Okay, so there you go. Rod Trongard, Billy Graham, Al Hayes back again this month. They run down the card for tonight. In our opener, is Paul Roma taking on Danny Davis, and what year is it with this opener? Oh, 85, 86, 87, 88. Looks like the Stallions may be done. Roma's going it alone. He has the little Italian flag back on his tights. Rod says Roma's a slow starter, and Graham agrees, and also says there's not 1 ounce of fat on that brother's body. We get some shtick and shenanigans to start as Roma starts to take over on offense. Billy says Davis has a devious reputation, and Rod says he's walking around like the cock of the block, which I love. I will use from now on. Things are still rolling slowly here until Davis baits Roma into a chase and then stomps him as he slides into the ring. Davis works through his soft offense, including a shitty forearm off the second rope and a lazy cover for two. Follows with a clothesline for two and grabs a chin lock. Davis works in and out of the hold while keeping Roma grounded. Roma battles free and gets a sleeper, but that's short-lived as he goes right back to a Davis chin lock. Al's all over Roma for letting Davis dictate this slow-as-dog-shit pace. Roma keeps trying to bust out of Davis, but Davis is using the hair to keep him in place. Roma finally wiggles out, starts to unload with fists, and then hits a missile dropkick for the win. Match was very sluggish and bland until that last 30 seconds. Roma wins, but keeps on his treadmill that he's been on since 85. Davis really needs to just get back to being a ref. Get the fuck out of the ring. I went half a star on this, Scott. What do you think, you maggot?
You maggot. You scum.
That was just for Chad. I promise I'd call you that after we talked about the word on Wrestling Warzone last week. So.
Okay. Your opening match time, 12:22. I gave this, my page just changed. I believe I gave it a half star. I almost gave it a dud, just on principle. Let's see. I gave it my page just changed. Hold on. I probably gave it the same thing you did, maybe even worse. Roma Davis.
It's a lot of hype for a fucking 1.5-star match. Let's go.
I know. Come on. It's here it comes. Here it comes. No. I think the highlight was the little Italian.
Yes, you gave it a half star. I have it right here. So go ahead. Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, half star. No, I gave it a half star.
We can all relax.
I know, right? I gave it a whopping. No, I'm not. That's not going to be one of those shows. This match sucked. It was terrible. And I just was looking at both Roma. I looked at Roma's bio, and they still team for a while. So technically the Stallions are still around. For probably about 6 or 7 more months. This match is terrible. At 12 minutes, I honestly, at this point, I didn't even realize Danny Davis was still wrestling. I thought he had already gone back to I know he goes off camera.
I think into 89 he wrestled still, like into early 89, I believe.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And I'm pretty sure that and then he goes off camera, and then I think by like late 90, he's back to reffing. But this is just dreadful. Maybe it was just to get a paycheck. That's fine. But 12 minutes? No. Considering some of the matches we have later on, that probably could have used a little extra time. 12 minutes here is ridiculous. But we had headlocks, and it was just terrible, John. I don't have much more to say here. Half star, another lousy opener. Maybe the crowd ate up the Roma part. I don't know. But it was not good.
We got to give credit to the creative or the booking or whatever for 1987, because for about a 6 month period, Danny Davis was like the hottest heel going into WrestleMania 3 with the with the ref gimmick. That was and it shows that they made something hot out of what limited skills he had. But this is a year and a half later, and time was up for him. As far as getting a decent match, they even gave up. Jimmy Hart gave up on him and everything. He just comes to the ring, but sadly for Roma, Davis dominated most of the match, and they were cracking on him. The Lord said, "Oh, Roma had a long flight from Europe," Trongard had to stretch it out because there wasn't much going in the ring. He had to say, "Oh, Danny, dangerous, devious, dubious, Davis." He kept making up. He had to come up with stuff, yeah. And Davis had a lethal on his tights. I had never seen that before. I don't know. His offense, though, wasn't too lethal. It was lethal if you were trying to stay awake.
I was saying, it's like a lethal injection watching the fucking match. Yeah.
Exactly.
Oof-ah, is all I can say. Oh, but one star for Roma's missile dropkick. The finish was right on. It looked good.
All right. Next up, the match we've seen a couple times here is Coco Beware takes on the Big Boss Man. I think it's the third time we've seen it, right? Did you see this at WrestleFest and SummerSlam? We see it at MSG as well. I think we've seen it a few times already. Oh, I guess
not. SummerSlam.
I'll take a look.
But I think we saw it. I think it was at WrestleFest, too. I'm pretty sure this is the third time they fought. WrestleFest.
Nope. Boss Man fought Scott Casey.
But did they fight before that, too? Wait, who did Boss Man fight when he debuted? That was Casey again. All right. So maybe not. I thought he fought him three times. All right. So here we go. Second time. Rod says, Frankie loves his man as we come back. Boss Man looking for another win. Graham says, Coco's given up a lot of weight. He has to use his speed. Graham doesn't believe Big Boss Man's listed weight and thinks he's actually 400 pounds. Rod bitches about the nightstick and how it always comes into play. Coco ducks and dodges to start. Boss Man eventually catches Coco, slugs away with some hard right hands, viciously chokes using the top rope. Coco gets knocked outside, lands some stiff shoulder blocks to the gut as he climbs back in. Tries a sunset flip, but Boss Man sits down hard to cut that off. Boss Man gets back to work, using his weight and heavy offense to maintain control, including a tight bear hug. Coco busts free, but Boss Man stays on top for a bit until the Birdman fires up, lands a hard flurry of punches that rattle the Boss Man, and Coco charges hard, and Boss Man catches him and hits a side slam for the win. Boss Man smacks Coco in the head with a nightstick and then cuffs him to the ropes and batters him some more. This is a solid squash, pretty much on par with SummerSlam. Bossman's great at selling and stooging around and then switching to offense in a blink. Like, he's just so sharp where he's just bouncing off the ropes, falling back and forth, and then, boom, back on. Just kind of rebounds and hits a move. Coco's always Coco. Puts over Bossman's strong competitive match. So I went star and a half on this, John. I enjoyed it. And Bossman's really been built up well. Like, now he's ready for that big main event push. He's not showed any real flaws in his offense as a kind of just a big bruiser.
Yeah, Coco is a great opponent for him. Also, Boss Man gives respect to Coco. His selling is great, too, on Coco's brief couple minutes of flurry there. But I never seen a match where Frankie was so active. he was interrupted Lord on the commentary. You heard him. He was chirping away. They must have forgot to feed him for a couple of days.
You think maybe Dynamite slipped him something in the back?
Frankie was freaking out. And you could tell when Boss Man's working hard, because when that third button pops open, his La Bonze pops out. That's when you know he's working
hard. It's like Pete hitting the tailgate, that extra button that pops open.
And then at one time, Coco hit him with a nice shot, and Boss Man did like the spit take, and I think it got on Superstar.
That spit is so fucking strong, brother. I can feel it. It's in the gym right now. That spit that's just sitting on my head.
And then that post-match beatdown, that stupid ref, the old Jack Lutz, whatever. He kept saying, "Hey, where's the key? Where's the key?" After poor Coco was sitting there all chained up, and it took him like forever just to find somebody with a key to unlock poor Coco. But definitely a good squash, good showcase for Boss Man.
Your match time, 7:03, and yeah, a tremendous match in the sense that that it was a good build for. I gave it a star, but it was a good build, good squash for Boss Man. And I mean, obviously, Vince knew and the bookers knew that he he had a decent experience in Crockett, so he kind of knew, you know, he wasn't like a rookie or anything. So he kind of knew his way around. So once he kind of got his feet wet and started dealing, you know, working the WWF style and the way to do things, he, you knew he was going to get elevated pretty quickly. And the matches that we've seen from him so far pretty much have just built his character and got him ready for what's to come, as you just said about Hogan, you know, jumping him. So obviously Boss Man was on the horizon for better things. And this was a good way to kind of finish that off as we head into the next big pay-per-view in a month. As for Coco, it's Coco. He's doing what he does best. And I agree with you, John, the selling for by Boss Man worked, even though he was, you know, busting out of his shirt that was three sizes too small, he never gets the right buttons there, but solid match. Again, it gave it a star, worked for Boss Man, worked for Coco. I thought maybe Frankie was going to start picking at Trongard's wig. Are non-wrestlers eligible for the best hair award? Because I'm almost wondering to give it to Trongard's wig.
Oh, God. It has to be real.
One of the highlights was when Slick came over to talk some shit, and the Superstar says, "Stay out of my face, you geek."
He could have called it a lot worse. Let's be happy he just went with geek. It was God knows what was running through his head when it came over there. All right. He's like, baby, get out of here. Rocker is taking on Demolition in the next match. Big time match here. The Rockers get that title shot discussed last month after their win. Demolition has been completely dominant in 1988, so this is a real good one on paper. Michaels and Axe start off. They trade some offense until Axe catches Sean on a crossbody and slams him down. Sean pops up and hammers away, leading to a reset and both guys tagging. The Rockers keep working fast, sneaking in a double team and keeping the champs off balance and the crowd rocking. The challengers keep quick tagging and sticking and moving, creating some fun chaos. Axe finally cracks Marty with a headbutt to knock him down, kill the hot streak. Champs get to work, pounding on Jannetty with hard strikes at a methodical pace. Jannetty escapes and tags Sean, but he quickly gets knocked to the floor thanks to a knee to the back. Smash suplexes Sean back in, twists into a Boston Crab, and the champs focus on the back, cutting off Sean's comebacks as they come. Axe goes to a bear hug. Sean wiggles free and hits a leaping forearm to knock Axe down and make the tag. Marty cleans house, and Sean staggers over and helps out as they batter the champs with double drop kicks and punches. Double slam, smash, and level Fuji, and the crowd is just going nuts. Marty jumps off Sean's shoulders with a splash, but Axe makes the save. Smash catches Marty in a bear hug. Axe slugs him in the side of the head. Smash covers, and the champs escape with the titles. Really fun tag match, a lot of heat. Selling was on point. The heat segment chugged along, and I really like the opening piece with the chaotic Rockers assault just all over Demolition. The finish was on fire as well, especially that near fall with Axe making the save. That was really, really good. And Demolition just keeps hanging on with those titles, and the Rockers really prove they're for real, getting a big-time shot here at the belts, and they are there right for the champs, and the champs have to really, you know, cheat to beat them. So this is a really good showing for both teams. I enjoyed it. Shows what Demolition could do if they get some workers in there too, so that was good. I went 3 stars, Scott.
Your match time, pretty robust and rightfully so, 12:24. I gave it 3.5. I love this match. Mm-hmm. I actually love both our tag matches.
It's one of those ones where I wish we did quarter stars, because I probably would have had – this is like a 3.25 to me. This is where it
would have landed. I gave it the full half. I really, really enjoyed it. And I think – and we'll get more into it. It's a good correlation when we get to our next tag match or our other tag match later on in the show. Again, another example of the incredible tag team renaissance we're going to get. You mentioned in our notes a team that I've been waiting for quite a while, and I'm fucking pumped when we finally get to see them. The tag division is just getting so ripe with talent right now. The reason I was looking forward to this match just as much as the other matches is we had the stories correlated. You had the Rockers, this young up and coming team that no one ever seen before against. Really a dominant Demolition, who have just been plowing over everybody since they won it at WrestleMania 4, both the house shows, and we've seen them on TV. They beat the shit out of the Bulldogs whenever they had a chance, beat the Hart Foundation at SummerSlam, and now they're taking on this team. And the Rockers, as we all know, guys, particularly Sean, great sellers, and they bumped like motherfuckers for Axe and Smash here. Great storytelling, trying to get the comebacks. For the first time, I have to say Demolition needed to work here. I don't want to say that teams like the Bulldogs didn't make an effort. I'm not saying that, but the Bulldogs are a little different. I mean, they're older, you know, Davey Boy's a bigger wrestler, but you got Marty and Sean, both equally small guys, 225, 230 pounds, and they're putting on a different speed that you normally don't see out of other tag teams right now. And the Rockers are just an infusion of young, fresh speed and quickness that we haven't seen out of. They're even faster than the Killer Bees, and the Killer Bees were supposed to be like the quick team in the WWF. And they, I mean, the Bees get lapped by these guys. I mean, I think we knew Demolition was going to retain here. I don't think you were going to Vince at that time wasn't big on, you know, hair trigger title changes, but the Rockers were going to scare them, and they gave them a good scare in this match, John. 3.5 for me. Great performance by the Rockers, but more important for me. Demolition really showed that they can kind of keep up against smaller, faster teams and kind of, you know, instill their power moves without slowing the match down. That impressed me in this match. That's why, again, it makes the tag division look good, and just as much for the Rockers, Demolition looked a lot better than they had.
They really emphasized the speed of the Rockers at the beginning with those quick tags. Like every 5 seconds, they were tagging in and out. And that was a great spot where they were just taking turns. Simple. They were just grabbing Axe's arm, a simple armbar, and they were switching off and taking turns on working his arm. But with that, Trongard also got over how devastating the Demolition was. He brought up Rick Martel, how they took him out. of Strike Force, and he was comparing the Demolition to like the old Green Bay Packers, the dominating Packers. And the crowd was really even though you say you didn't really feel there was much of a chance for a title change, but back then there was really always hope that this is the night you get to see a title change, and the crowd was really into it. It's a very good crowd, and that finishing sequence when they got the move off the top rope and they got the 2.5 count, that was a big pop, but also a great finish with the bear hug and the that clothesline out of nowhere. Just a 3-star match all around.
All right, let's move along. Yep, go ahead. Sorry, Scott.
No, I was just gonna say I agree with you, John. Tremendous match.
Yeah, no, it was really good. It definitely showcased, and like you both said, it gave Demolition someone different to work with, and just the tag division is really. As great as the Bulldogs are, it's good to see them. I mean, they just got to get phased out. Like, we got to move on, and they're reloading and restocking the division. So I think there's a lot of good that's going to come out of this as we continue to move forward. And we talked about other teams as well. So good days ahead. Not so good days ahead in this next feud. That's our next match. Has the mighty Hercules taking on Virgil. It's our first look at Herc as a face. So why don't we talk about the match, guys, and then we can talk about the angle, our thoughts on that. DiBiase is in his banging green suit, which is always awesome to see. Rips Herc before he comes out, calling him the boy and his slave and possession that he bought. And this is a real ballsy angle. Herc needed a change, though. We'll see if it helps him at all. DiBiase attacks Herc as he comes in, but Herc runs him to the floor and batters the shit out of him. With a hot flurry of strikes as the crowd is fired up. Herc gets a power slam. He's all pumped up as he hooks a full Nelson for the win as Virgil fades the sweep quickly. DiBiase comes in and clobbers Herc, but Herc won't let go of the hold, even through a chair shot, and the crowd is just eating this all up. Ted eventually gets the chain and chokes Hercules with it until he grabs the chain and whips Ted to the floor. Al says, no wonder Ted wanted to buy his services. hot scene, good, well-done squash here to get Herc established as a face and to pump more heat into the feud. I win a star. I thought Herc showed great energy and the crowd was into it. It's just, all right, we'll talk about the story in a minute, but John, what did you think of the match itself?
Well, it accomplished what it wanted. It got Hercules over huge, but we'll see. This is probably the zenith. This is the top of the mountain. It's downhill from here, but you would think that, Hercules was getting ready towards a monster face run because the crowd was into him. But I like at the ring announcement how they announced Virgil from his full residence in Bel Air, California. they gave Virgil the $1 million man.
The fall residence, the pool house behind Ted DiBiase's home.
In Bel Air, California.
Fucking Will Smith.
It was short and sweet, and it got Hercules over huge, but as we can see, it's not really going to continue.
Your match time, nice, quick, and tidy, 2:12. This was perfect booking. Yes, the whole slave boy possession thing. I mean, probably not as bad as the Kunta Kinte line that Jesse said a couple years earlier, because it is one white guy talking to another white guy, so maybe it's not as big a deal. But the crowd is just ridiculous. I think people always, and maybe it's us. Not that it's Back to the Future, but. Maybe people in 1988 have been thinking kind of like we've been thinking about Hercules. Like, you know what? This guy's actually not bad. Solid power worker. No great shakes in terms of crazy in ring. But still, he's been very serviceable. He's been pretty good. Good heel. Maybe the crowd was starting to dig him anyway, even before this happened. I know that's not normal thinking for the late 80s, but at times you never know. And maybe the crowd was ready to burst for Herc. And here we go. So, he crushed Virgil. That was nice and easy. And I don't want to be too cynical about it, John. I mean, I think there was the peak for Herc is yet to come. I don't want to be too cynical about it. Maybe I think maybe there was a good run for him for at least the next, say, 6 months. And then maybe once we get into the late spring, then maybe it starts to fade. But I think even still there was a good feeling about him. And I think the crowd was into him, seemed like. But
I think eventually his promo abilities, a lack of
kind of absolutely.
Right, yeah, he was good as like Heenan's heavy. And interesting because we'll see how he does as a face. But the more we've seen of him, his offense and energy is pretty good. But his selling is chakwa. So we'll see as we move forward. But he is a guy that needed a change. Like, he had pretty much run his course in his current role. That was clear. what more could he do? So a face turn was in the cards, but I mean, like, I think they could have done it without the slave thing. Like, why couldn't DiBiase just said, I need another bodyguard. You know, everyone's coming after me after dealing with the mega powers. Like, a fan's coming. You know, I need more muscle. Virgil can't handle it all. So I'm going to buy this guy's contract. Just like I bought Andre. I've done business before with Heenan. Here's another guy. And Herc is like, fuck you. I don't want to be managed by you. You know, instead of this whole, you know, just going down this route and this path that's just going to obviously lead to questionable comments and material. There's no way around it, especially when you got guys like, you know, Billy Graham and Jesse Ventura and others that don't think before they talk about stuff like this, that grew up in a different generation. We're going to see it. The comments are going to come when it comes to slave stuff. This is why you can open up this can of worms and go down this path and be so blatant about it, calling him a slave. And, you know, I mean, with the chain, this is so much wrong in all of it.
This is 1988. You know, it could have been a lot worse. Like I bet Vince was saying, damn, why did Butch Reed quit? We could have done it with him. You know, they really wanted to go all out. And Vince has probably said, oh, Hernandez, Spanish, that's the next best thing. We'll just go with that. You know, I'm sorry if anybody's offended, but that in 1988, that's probably what the thinking was along those lines. If you could be a fly on the wall in one of those booking meetings.
It's rough. I mean, and they could have. The thing is, like, he's super over here. What they could have really done if they wanted to just get him over without doing this nonsense is you could have just had, Virgil and DiBiase corner Liz. Savage is down. Hogan's out of town, and Herc comes and makes the save. You know, because he couldn't and then boom, now you got him with Savage and Hogan, which you kind of do anyway.
Because he had to overcome that angle too. It didn't really make him look too swift out there, like what Bobby told him. Hey, I got this business deal with DiBiase. I need you to come out and protect my money or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, Hercules, you're the slave. You know, It kind of made him look a little stupid, even though he fought back right away.
Or you could have had him do that anyway with the like, hey, DiBiase hired you for a night, and he didn't realize he was hiring him to beat down Savage so they could take on Liz or something. You know what I mean? Like, could have done something like that where almost that like they do later with Boss Man and the belt and everything. You know, so like Herc realizes he's being used as a pawn so they can fuck with Liz, and then he turns. Like, something like that, and it would have worked. Probably would have gotten even more over, and then you haven't beat the shit out of Virgil. Instead, we get this. It's just opening the door for just bad stuff, which we'll see come. What'd you think of the whole thing, Scott?
I mean, I gave it a half star again, but I mean, yeah, this is just a successful squash. Storytelling wise, on this evening, it worked, but Herc, I think will ride. I still think that there's going to be an energy ride for Herc for the next few months, but I definitely agree that eventually the weaknesses do outweigh the strengths, and he's probably not a guy that can be by himself. And needed a. Unfortunately, this is where the lack of face managers kind of hurts. But for now, though, it was a pretty good push, and a nice moment here. 2:12. Your runtime, nice and quick. But yeah, I don't disagree, John. I just think that the peak will be a little longer than we think. But the weaknesses do end up coming to the fore down the line. However, we're about to. Well, no, that's two matches from now. Anyway, big win for Herc. And a good start to at least immediately a nice push.
Yep, agreed.
So, yep. So.
All right, we'll see how that goes. Up next, we have a big debut, and that is the arrival of the Blue Blazer, Owen James Hart, born May 7th, 1965, in Calgary, Alberta, into the Hart Wrestling family. The youngest child is Stu and Helen. Grew up with 11 siblings. Hart first gained his experience in the amateur wrestling division in high school, trained in the father's dungeon, worked in Stampede and then in England, and then, of course, remained with Stampede for a few years, owning his skills. In 1986, teamed with Ben Basarab and won the Stampede Wrestling International Tag Team titles. He also won PWI's Rookie of the Year Award in 87, went over to New Japan, had some success there, and due to the success in Japan and Stampede's working relationship in the WWF, Hart signed with the company in the summer of 88, but instead of being promoted as Bret Hart's younger brother, WWF decided to create a masked superhero-type gimmick to play to his high-flying style, and that is the Blue Blazer. So he makes his arrival in MSG here tonight, taking on old Steve Lombardi. Blazer chugs to the ring, flips into it for the match here. Rod loves the Blazer, calls him exciting, creative, and acrobatic. Billy says no name and no country when he's announced. Blazer's all over Lombardi, strong off his agility and quickness and nabbing some near falls. Blazer slows up on some things, slows things up with a chin lock, mixing those in between pin attempts and strikes. Lombardi's gotten zero offense here as Blazer's just working him all over the place. Lombardi finally gets a clothesline that he fucks up and stumbles through it. Blazer just kind of stumbles between the middle ropes and the floor. Lombardi suplexes Blazer back in and gets two on a slam. Lombardi gets a chin lock as Rod is shocked he has taken control of this one. Blazer comes back and hits a missile dropkick followed by more offense, capped by a very casual moonsault off the top for the win. Lombardi's terrible, just stumbling around awkwardly. Just no coordination or balance at all. He's a mess. Blazer looks smooth, and the crowd is very into his offense, but just not much here. A squash with some sloppy Lombardi mixed in. Blazer gets the win and moves on. I just went a half a star on this one, Scott. Just, it wasn't too much going on.
No, I gave it a half star as well. Your match time, I have to double check the match time. But, yeah, I mean, and I feel bad because we all know how good a wrestler Owen is. When you're in the Hart family, you know, unless you're Bruce or Keith, you have some kind of you do have some kind of ability. And we knew, we had heard about, you know, little brother for a while. But Lombardi's a fucking putz. I mean, he's just terrible. He doesn't know how to. He flops around.
No,
he's
everything
like
he does
a,
is awkward. It's awful.
It's just there's no flow to even selling. I mean, it looks like he looks terrible, absolutely terrible. I kind of felt bad for Owen here, but. Blazer looks good, kind of a cool gimmick, kind of fun, a little fun action here. But there's not much more to that, John. I mean, great gimmick for Owen, but Lombardi's a fucking schlub. I mean, just no right being in the ring. He really doesn't. Just awkward, doesn't know how to sell. It's just a mess.
Yeah, you can see he had to scramble just to be in position for Owens. Owen was moving 200 miles an hour, and you can see Lombardi was like panicking a couple times, just trying to get in position. He was all over the place, and even Tron God said, he said Lombardi is stunned physically and mentally. And also another good on commentary, Superstar said, I think I know where he's from, brother. I said hello to the Blazer backstage, and I noticed a bit of a British accent, brother. And then Lord says, yes, he does wrestle a European style.
Gotta love it.
Yeah, these three stuff was starting to grow on me on the commentary, second month in a row.
I enjoy them. I like them.
Yeah. Yes,
I did too.
Me too.
I've actually liked Billy a little bit more than I thought. Again, SummerSlam was probably his worst work. He's been fine on these house shows, so I don't know what it was. Maybe it's just him and Gorilla don't mesh well, but he's been fine with Trongard or with Mooney and these other guys here at MSG. So it's been enjoyable overall.
Yeah, he cut the brothers in half, and now if we could only get Scott to cut the couple brothers in half on the main event.
Baby, I love your way. All right, let's move on. It is now time for our huge...
Your match time, by the way, your match time was, just to confirm, was 8:09. And, of course, that was Owen Hart's first ever match at the Garden. So, anyway, just want to confirm that.
All right, time for our main event. Mid-show main event, anyway. Huge rematch after the wild scene last month. It's the World Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship is on the line as Macho Man Randy Savage takes on Andre the Giant, and the fans are jacked for Savage, as always. Andre generates top-notch heat, of course. Rod is marveling over the 280-pound weight difference between these two. Rod reminds us that Savage will lose the title if he's DQ'd or counted out tonight, and we get a bunch of stalling. Pat Patterson comes down and chats with the ref, and the Fink announces that Bobby Heenan and Elizabeth must stay in their corners, and if they move, their respective charge would be disqualified. Savage comes right at Andre, but Andre catches him and chokes and smacks away. Savage tries to elbow out of a tight standing chin lock, but Andre wrenches the grip. Savage peppers out, unleashes a flurry, but Andre stops him cold with a shot. Andre does some weird reverse full Nelson type submission and holds that for a while. Bobby exposes one of the turnbuckles as Savage starts a comeback with some running elbows and punches. Savage eventually rocks Andre with a shot and sends him reeling into the ropes and onto his ass. Savage keeps bringing the heat and hits an axe handle off the top, knocking Andre to his back. Savage goes up and comes up empty on an elbow as Andre rolls to the floor. Savage meets him out there with a double axe that knocks him down, and Bobby comes over and grabs Savage to stop him from getting inside, drawing the DQ. Heenan keeps the leg hooked, but Savage dodges an Andre elbow and then slugs Bobby. Andre destroys the announce table in a rage and storms off while covering his ears. A lot of fun yet again. A clear step behind the wild chaos of last month, though. But Andre is real spry again, moving all around, and Savage's usual dynamic self. And anytime Andre's knocked down, it's such an event. Like, it's amazing that at this point still, anytime he hits the mat, it's like a thing in itself. It's just like a huge event. And the crowd is oohs and ahs. So like that's such a big part of these matches. And this seems like this fun feud is going to continue. So I went 2.5, just a notch behind last month, but still just a wild scene. And just Andre continues to just dominate 88, John.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Last month's match was a notch above this one. And I didn't really think that Andre wasn't really any trouble for him to just get DQ'd out of nowhere.
Right.
It wasn't like he was in danger of losing a match. So that was it was a little disappointing finish. But you know, Macho got the win, and the crowd was happy. But
you think this is going to continue, John, or do you think it's they're just protecting Andre, and you know, they just want to
They're just protecting Andre. And It looked like that was it. I guess that's the only way they could protect him. They can't really put the belt on him, I guess. Or maybe they could, but I don't think that was in the plans to travel with the belt. So, yeah. So no, I guess this is the best they've come up with, but it was a little disappointing, especially compared to last month.
Yeah, I would agree. Especially, it was such a wild scene last month. Yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Scott?
I gave it 2 stars. Your runtime only 6:59. Yeah, I think it was evident that this it's unfortunate because Andre has such a great 88, but it's obvious that this has run its course. This match was really slow and plodding. Andre seemed to have kind of dipped into the fountain of youth a little bit over most of the last 6 months, but the age. I can't even see the age. The you know, the pain and the debilitation, it kind of creeped in here. He was lumbering and savage to the best he could.
Oh, see, I don't think so. I thought he's still kind of spry here. I don't know. Like, to me, he still looked pretty good. I think they just didn't give enough time and put the extra bells and whistles around it to make it pop like last month. And then the finish, like John said, just kind of comes quick out of nowhere. It almost would have been better if Andre just got counted out or something, but I don't think he looked lumbering or slow. I think he still looked okay.
I don't know. Maybe Savage was slowing down for him. I don't know. It just did. It seemed like it didn't have the same sizzle that the last month's did, or even the ones we saw earlier in the year. Andre looked great at the end when he was like pretty much beating the shit out of the announced guys and almost flipped the table over. That was kind of cool. Did love Savage's yellow orange combo tights. It's a very rare color scheme for him, so that was kind of cool. I do think though that. To answer your question, JR, that you asked, John, I do think this has run its course. I do think that this is probably it. I don't think we'll see this again because obviously the next phase of Savage's career or the next storyline will be starting soon. Mm-hmm. So I think they need to kind of clear the decks of that and move on. So I think this is it for this feud. I don't think we'll see it again. Again, you're not going to have Andre lose clean and you're not going to have Andre win the title. So they had to come up with some wonky ending, and they did. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'll actually watch it again. I don't know. It just felt like it was slower, and I felt maybe it was.
No,
maybe
I don't
it felt
disagree
like
with you.
I
just don't think it was Andre. I don't think it was Andre being slower. If that makes sense. Like, I do think the match seems a step behind. I do think the excitement, you know, the heat wasn't as hot as last month. But I don't think it had to do with Andre like being more run down or anything like that. I think it was just a little off. Like, I think everything just went perfect last month. You know,
right?
No. And also it hurt that the brain had to stay seated. That stipulation where they said, but like Bobby couldn't get involved, but you know, both managers must remain seated, and
right,
and that also hurt. There was no threat of the brain, but also I don't think it's not so much protecting Andre. They want to they're still protecting like Hulk. They still want the Hulk to be the only one that had pinned Andre. So that's another thing. Yeah. They didn't want to elevate Macho to that level yet as champion. They want to keep like Hulk's legacy that he was the only one to pin him.
That's not a bad theory. I would sign up for that.
I'll toss out the theory that I think they were trying to keep him strong for his next feud. Well, I guess his next one's Jake, right? So maybe not. I was thinking Warrior was next. I think they just didn't want. Yeah, I think it was partially that, and partially they just had plans in mind for who should beat him, and Savage isn't that guy. And I just think believably they figure as great as Savage is, it wouldn't look believable for him to win maybe that match. And maybe they just figured he came off of losing the feud to Hogan. Like, do they want him to get pinned again? Yeah, I just figured they're saving him to build someone else up, and Savage didn't need it. as much. So, anyway, it's been a fun mini feud. So we'll see if things continue on at all. But Andre has other things, of course, coming up. So why don't we take a break, gentlemen? We'll come back, and we only have a few matches left. We got our usual interviews. We'll do some pop culture as always. But first, take a look, listen to, I guess, still kind of new break, right?
Because, yeah, it is kind of. It's so exciting. Everybody's
cool. It's so I am the one hiding under your bed. Teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place Free Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceFreeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place Free Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talkin' Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
We're back checking out the October 1988 Madison Square Garden House Show. And, you know, Scott, for many, Halloween is kind of the Valentine's Day of the fall, right? There's a lot of love in the air for some that are into the macabre, into the darkness, into the costumes and the candy. And, you know, it's a holiday of love for many people. Get married in Halloween, and it's a different kind of love. It's a groovy kind of love out there. And I think it's a groovy kind of love that we all have here tonight. There's a picture of pure sex for me and D'Amato last night. That was a groovy kind of love. You saw that in live chats. If you want to see it, let me know. I can share it. And, of course, that is also the number one song in the nation tonight. Phil Collins' Groovy Kind of Love leads us into Scott Criscolo's Pop Culture Corner.
Thank you, JR. And yes, one of my favorite, actually, Phil Collins solo hits of the 80s, Groovy Kind of Love, is your number one song on the Billboard charts. The chart came out 2 days earlier. That's Saturday the 22nd. At number two, a cover, a remake of a great Neil Diamond tune, a little Red Red Wine by UB40.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, What's on Your Mind? Pure Energy from Information Society. I don't even remember that song. John, do you remember that song? I don't remember that song at all. Number four, Little Love Bites. So a Groovy Kind of Love and Love Bites from Def Leppard at number four.
Yes,
number
I do. I don't know what you're feeling. Can you tell me what's on your mind?
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Can you
yeah.
call me up on Skype?
number five, Wild Wild West by The Escape Club. Now,
Will
there's
Smith.
A hit right there. Yeah, I know.
Later be co-opted by him.
So many songs from movies. Mm-hmm. Number six, Kokomo, from the movie Cocktail, by the Beach Boys. Number seven, Don't You Know What the Night Can Do, by Steve Winwood. Didn't Miller Lite use that, or Bud Light or something? Number eight, one of our favorites, Bobby Brown, well, Don't Be Cruel. Number nine, back-to-back Don't Be Cruels. Number
Elvis.
Eight, the original tune by Bobby Brown. No. Number nine, his that song, though, but remade by Cheap Trick. I think we talked about it a few weeks ago. And then number 10, another cover, The Locomotion by Kylie Minogue at number 10. So we had movie songs and covers all over top 10 this week. But your number one is Groovy Kind of Love by Phil Collins.
Kokomo. Coco Ware.
Coco Ware. All right, let's take a look.
Frankie, watch you.
All right. A very busy Friday at the box office, JR. Four movies came out the day before. Three of them actually very well known. We begin with a fine war movie called Bat 21. And actually, just for you to look it up, put an asterisk between the bat and the 21.
Okay, so let's talk about Paul O'Neill. Okay.
That's right, the warrior.
During the last days of the Vietnam War, USAF Lieutenant Colonel ICL E. Gene Hambleton call sign Bat 21 Bravo is flying on board an EB-66C electronic warfare aircraft engaged in electronic countermeasures preparatory to a major bombing strike, and you can figure out the rest from there. Starring Gene Hackman, Danny Glover, Jerry Reed, Clayton Rohner, Joe Dorsey, Reverend Michael Wynn, Bonnie Yong, Fung Yong Gong.
Fung Yong Gong. It's a pretty good movie because Gene Hackman and Danny Glover never are on camera.
Mm-hmm.
They're literally only talking over a radio.
Oh, you only hear them?
So, you hear them, you just don't see them.
That's what I'm saying. You only hear them.
You only hear them. Yeah. Yep. They only talk to you. You see them, but not together.
Interesting.
See
them, but I don't believe them.
All right. Number two is a movie that might be on a future episode of The Drive-In with Mrs. Jenny Smith, one of the most anticipated sequels to come out that year, Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers.
Mm. So what's the one they just did on Freak Out Drive-In? Wasn't it this one?
They did – is that the one they did? I thought they did another one.
I don't know. I don't know the difference between any of them. I just listened to it today, though. You'd think I would know.
This was because three, they went away from Michael Myers, and then now they brought Myers back.
And they brought him back. So it was a big deal in 1988.
Yeah.
Big deal.
All right, hang on. I'll read about it in a second. I just want to confirm because I feel like an idiot now because I just listened to it. They did Friday the 13th, the final chapter. Which one's that?
Yes, they did that fourth episode. Yes, that's right. They did that fourth movie, not this fourth movie.
Oh, right. Halloween. Jesus Christ. Sorry. I'm a mess. Is that the one you did with her? It's all the fucking same to me. I'm just exposing
myself. We did
the
original.
Right, but I'm saying you did a Halloween movie. That's why I'm getting confused.
Yes, we did.
But I knew they did a fourth one. So it was Friday the 13th, the fourth, right?
Yep.
I should have known that. Mark Jason Myers chose the guy to have named after him, so. All right, on October 30, 1988, Michael Myers has been in a comatose state for 10 years since his exposure to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital, transferred to Smith's Grove Sanitarium by ambulance. En route, Michael awakens upon hearing that his sister Laurie Strode, who had died in a car accident, has a daughter, Jamie Lloyd, kills the ambulance personnel and a bunch of other bullshit. Starring Donald Pleasance, Ellie Cornell, George Wilbur, Beau Starr, Michael Pataki, Ray O'Connor, Eric Hart, one of the Hart brothers.
That's right.
Logan Field. Sasha Jensen.
That's a guy, by the way. Sasha. Kathleen Kinmont's pretty hot. Yeah, Sasha. It's a guy named Sasha. Yeah. Right. Kathleen Kinmont's pretty hot, actually. Okay. George Wilbur is one who actually played Michael Myers. Ellie Cornell was cute, too. But a great movie. Actually, it was a good return to the franchise. Just a little quick background. John said, the explosion at Haddonfield Memorial Hospital was the end of Halloween 2.
Mm-hmm.
And John Carpenter had intended to end the Michael Myers storyline there, and they wanted to make the Halloween franchise an anthology. Every Halloween would be a different theme. They tried that with Halloween 3 Season of the Witch, failed miserably, and then 10 years later realized we got to bring this guy back because we have Jason, we have Freddy, we need M2 back. So that's what happened. So it was a big deal in 1988 when that came back.
Okay.
All right, next movie is a movie about a place that I actually drove by on Saturday. It's a real place. And it also it actually marked the beginning of two major film careers. The movie is Mystic Pizza.
Ooh. Drive by it every time I go to Foxwoods.
That's right.
Films about the coming of age of two sisters and their friend through the romantic lives of the three main characters, Kat Araujo, Daisy Araujo, and Jojo Barboza, who are waitresses at Mystic Pizza, owned by Leona, in Mystic, Connecticut. In the film, Mystic is represented as a fishing town, a large Portuguese-American population. The film also touches on an old-world work ethic. Of course, it doesn't feature the Quito Portuguito, Jeff Fachado, but... Starring Annabeth Gish, Julia Roberts, Lily Taylor, Vincent D'Onofrio, Adam Stork, Conchata Ferrell. Anyone else worthwhile here? Matt Damon?
A very young Matt Damon. It's actually first movie.
Dennis Paiva.
Yeah.
As himself. So, Portuguese-American wedding singer.
Yep. Have you ever eaten there, JR, on your way to Foxwoods?
I have never eaten there.
Neither
like I said, I've driven by it a ton, but I've never actually eaten there. I've been to Mystic, I've been to the aquarium and the area around it, but never to the pizza place.
Me too.
Did I got a Mozambique pie?
Maddie Souza down there stuffing it down.
The Silvano special. Yeah. Yes. I drove by it. I was there in Mystic Saturday. Yep, drove by
it. The beluga whales.
Beluga whales. All right, and one more film. This one. I believe this is a funny comedy with a couple of young guys in it. It is Tapeheads.
Okay.
Interesting.
Pinheads.
Tapeheads.
After losing their jobs as security guards, best friends Ivan and Josh start a music video production company called Video Aces. When they meet their childhood heroes, 1970s soul duo Swanky Modes, Ivan and Josh concoct a scheme to give them a new audience by hijacking a Menudo concert, getting them to perform in Menudo's place and broadcasting live across the country on television satellite hookup. Starring John Cusack, Tim Robbins, Mary Crosby, Doug McClure, Sam Moore, Xander Berkeley, Weird Al is himself, Don Cornelius, Ted Nugent, Martha Quinn.
Isn't this how
Courtney
Models
Love, Bobcat Goldthwait, David Anthony Higgins? All these people are pretty much as themselves, but...
Isn't this how Mala Seam started? Josh.
You really got named Josh. Yep.
That's right. Yes. Ivan was your pseudo name, right? Was your. anyway, those are the movies that came out on that day. The Major League Baseball season is over, and as my PIC hopes to say in a week, congratulations to the world champion Los Angeles Dodgers,
mm-hmm.
who upset.
20 years later, we're gonna do it again.
I said it to Mr. Rotella today. I knew you were going to say that. Defeating the heavily favored Oakland A's, just like they could beat the heavily favored Boston Red Sox. We'll see. Who will be this year's Kirk Gibson? Who's an old guy that could limp out and hit a home run off Kimbrel in game one? We'll have to wait and see. Are there any gimps that are on the Dodgers right now?
This show was on the night after game two, by the way.
Oh, yeah. So the Dodgers are your world champions. So congrats to the Dodgers. All right. But since we are no longer on the field for baseball, it is time, however, to take the field.
It's loading.
Thought you had it ready.
I did. Here we go.
There you go. Mr. D'Amato, you held your own against our champion.
Speaking of that music, be sure to listen to This Week in the NFL each and every week on the PlayStation Pop feed.
Cheap plug, that's right.
D'Amato on there every week.
There you go. Very nice.
Giving us campus hotcakes.
Right now, your team's on right now, Mr. D'Amato, down at the bunt pan known as Mercedes-Benz, which is kind of ironic, and I'll explain why in a moment. This is actually hilarious, actually. We are in week 8 of the 1988 NFL season. Mr. D'Amato, you held your own. JR, do you have the standings? What did you guys do last?
You won 7-5.
Wow, look at that. Off to a strong start. You're for the pack.
I told you it's not fair. He was watching these games. He was 21 and whatever. It's
not fair to Flair.
Doesn't watch this shit.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Are you ready?
We have to give props to your PIC there. His new name is Mr. Perfect. He He did a clean sweep on the NFL picks this year. Got everyone right.
Well, it was pending the Giants could still win this game. We'll see.
Sure.
If the Falcons hang on, yes, it'll be a perfect week.
We'll see.
But otherwise, it was an impressive. We always break his balls, call him Nostra Zero, but he came through this week, so we'll call him Mr. Perfect this week.
It's Nostra Zero is better than Nostra Dumbass. But anyway, let us go to Week 8, you know, because big markets matter. Let us begin at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. The Chiefs hosting the Detroit Lions, JR.
Chiefs hosting, so I take Kansas City in that one.
Yes, me too.
Well, when we did it last week, the Chiefs lost at home, and they lose at home again!
God, where's the Arrowhead advantage?
7-6 in a slugfest.
That sounds like the results of the Asbury mayor election right there. 7-6, right?
Yeah, 7-6, that's right. Six! Next, we go to Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati. The Bengals hosting the Houston Oilers. D'Amato.
I'll go with the Houston Oilers. Love you, Blue.
I'll take the Bungles.
Well, it is the MVP season for Boomer Esiason. Bengals win 44-21. Let's head down to the Big Sombrero in Tampa. The Bucks hosting the Minnesota Vikings, JR.
I will take Minnesota in that one.
Okay.
I will go with the Jolly Buccaneers.
Bucko Bruce. Wade Wilson throws for 335 yards. Vikings win easily, 49-20. Let's go up to Rich Stadium in Buffalo. The Bills hosting the New England Patriots. John.
This is 1988. I'll go with Buffalo.
Yeah, me too.
Bills win 23-20. Believe it or not, tonight –
I'm walking
Giants
on
in. Atlanta.
George is not
and
home.
On this night, tonight the Giants are in Atlanta. And in Week 8 in 1988, the Giants were in Atlanta.
Oh,
unbelievable.
Wow.
Let's go to Fulton County Stadium as the New York Football Giants, JR, taking on the Falcons.
I'll take the Gents.
Me too.
Yep. Phil Sims throws for 252, and the Giants win 23-16. I can't believe it. I can't have all nights. It's amazing. I don't think that's ever happened since we've done the Pop Culture Corner. Let's go to Three Rivers. The Steelers hosting the Denver Broncos. Mr. D'Amato.
Steel. Iron City Light all the way. Steelers.
I'll take Denver on the road.
Steelers win comfortably 39-21.
Jeez.
Don't mess with Bobby Brister. Bobby Brister.
Booby.
So, actually, Elway did not play in that game. Gary Kubiak was the starting quarterback, which is probably why the Broncos lost. Let's go to Philadelphia, that dump known as the Vet, where the Eagles host the Dallas Cowboys. Who's up? JR.
Yeah, I'll take Philly on that one.
Yeah, me too.
Steve Palour, one of our greatest quarterbacks ever, threw for 342 yards. But, yes, the Eagles win by a point, 24.
Is that the main character on Dodgeball, Steve LaPour?
Steve LaPour, yes. Let's go to the Superdome in New Orleans. The Saints hosting the Raiders, Mr. D'Amato.
I'll go with the autumn wind is a Raider.
Yeah, I'll take the Raiders, too.
Bobby Hebert could not be understood in the postgame press conference, but did throw for 137 yards, and the Saints win 20-6.
Wow.
Son of a.
Let's go to the Orange Bowl in Miami, where JR, your JETS Jets, taking on the Miami Dolphins.
I'll take Miami on that one.
Okay. Mr. D'Amato?
This is, what are we, the Ken O'Brien era? I'll go with the Jets. Go with the Jets.
Dan Marino, on this day, threw for 521 yards, but the Jets win 44-30.
Right. O'Brien had 6 touchdowns, right?
Yes.
That was that famous his best game ever. Yeah.
I'll have to look at the box score on that. Let's cheat real quick and just take peek.
It was overtime, yeah. He went in overtime.
Nope, that was not that game. I know the game you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
That was at the Meadowlands. This one was at the Orange Bowl. Let's see. Let me go to passes. Passing. Here we go. Ken O'Brien, 18 of 37, 174 yards, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Dan Marino was 35 of 60 for 521 yards, 3 touchdowns, but he threw 5 interceptions.
Jesus.
Wow.
There you go. five big picks for that Jets secondary, and they get the win 44-30. Let's go to Lambeau Field in Green Bay, the Packers hosting the Redskins, Mr. D'Amato.
I'll go with the Skins.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, Skins win 20-17. Let's go to Phoenix, where the Cleveland Browns take on the Phoenix Cardinals, JR.
The Browns.
Oof, I'll go with the Cardinals.
Bernie Kosar throws for 314 yards. Browns win 29-21. Let's go out. Yes, he did. Let's go out to the Murph, where the Chargers host the Indianapolis Colts. Who are we up to? 10, 11, 12. Mr. D'Amato.
San Diego Superchargers.
All right. Chair.
Yeah, I'll take the Chargers too.
Eric Dickerson. I believe this is his first year in Indianapolis. Rushes for 169 yards. Colts throw a shutout. Wow. 16-0.
Son of a.
Let's go out to Anaheim. The Rams host the Seattle Seahawks. JR.
The Rams host the Seahawks. Yeah, I'll take the Rams.
Okay.
JR. Yeah, I'll go with the Rams. Go with the Rams.
All right. Well, Jim Everett, or Jim Evert, Chris Evert, as Jim Rome called him, 311 yards passing. Rams win 31-10. And finally, on Monday night at Soldier Field, the Bears host the 49ers.
Wow, it's a big one.
Mr. D'Amato.
I'll go with the Niners.
I'll take the Bears.
In a slugfest, and apparently it was pretty cold on that night, Bears win 10-9.
Son of a...
So, a very, Big Pete.
Yeah, the Bears were awake on that night, unlike the number one fan.
All right, so I win that one 9-7, so we're tied up now after two. So there
tied
you go.
Up.
Son of a... That was as shitty a week as I had yesterday. Damn.
So I believe... Well, thank you, Mr. D'Amato, for your 2 weeks. I believe on our next outing, I believe Mr. Winston will be...
Great.
In the
so we get a fucking nonsense soliloquy on every goddamn game between the two of you, breaking down the pressure.
Don't blow it. Don't blow it, Peter.
All right. Hey, look at the fan in the third row of that fucking Bears Vikings game.
And then I found this pregnant girl. No. Anyway,
let's go backstage. Yeah, let's get back to MSG. Backstage, Sean Mooney's with Ted DiBiase and Virgil. Ted's reminding Hercules that he's still a slave and he'll understand this all by the time it's over. Virgil's a great bodyguard, but not a wrestler, and Herc doesn't have a brain, so Ted will outsmart him and do things himself. Mooney's then with Jim Duggan, who talks about the shitty way Dino Bravo and Frenchie Martin carry themselves. Waits don't fight back, but Duggan does. We then cut to Mooney with the Rougeau brothers, who talk about the Hart Foundation and their new manager, Jimmy Hart. The smarmy faux sincerity continues. Ray says the Rougeaus get a percentage of the Hart's contracts, and they want them to keep winning, so they'll keep making money, and they credit their fans for all the support. And then finally, Mooney's with Rick Rude and Bobby Heenan talking about their match tonight. He says if he wins, Cheryl Roberts comes home with him for a big night on the town. That brings us to our next match coming out of the break, and that is Hacksaw Jim Duggan taking on Dino Bravo. Bravo and Frenchie amble out. Rod questions him being the strongest man as Frenchie rambles in French like an asshole. Duggan stomps out to loud chairs and hoes, is toting a giant American flag on his shoulder. Bravo attacks from behind to start, but Duggan comes right back with a clothesline and punches. Bravo bails to regroup as the crowd is all riled up. Dino returns and shows off his power and gloats. Duggan cuts him right off and sends him back outside again. Frenchie coaxes Bravo back to the ring. Al says it's because he wants to get paid. The USA chants are raucous as Duggan gets tangled with Frenchie, allowing Bravo to nail him from behind and get to work with his terrible strikes. Bravo grabs a chin lock and kicks away at the back. Duggan gets a sloppy sunset flip for two, but Bravo takes back over with an inverted atomic drop. Duggan blocks a pile driver and starts to unload with punches and clotheslines. Bravo ends up outside again, and Duggan meets him there, and they trade punches. Duggan shoves Bravo to the post and catches Frenchie trying to attack. Duggan stomps around. Bravo slides in and gets the count-out win. Duggan wipes out Frenchie with a 2x4 after the bell as Bravo takes off for cover. The crowd heat real bailed this out. There was nothing else going on, but the crowd was so into it. Duggan's fine. Bravo's horse shit, dog shit, every other kind of shit you can find. And it looks like this is far from over. I went a half a star on this one, Scott. It's a bad mix because Duggan's not going to be carrying anyone, and Bravo's just fucking terrible. So it is what it is, I guess. But we're in for probably more of this slog.
Did you quote Ron Trongar? He's bumbling in French like an asshole.
I wish he said that. Basically, he did.
Your match time 8:16. You know what's funny about this match, JR, is I almost was feeling confident that this may not actually be that bad. Hear me out here.
Come on.
Bravo struggles when he's dealing with guys that are a little quicker. He's kind of the opposite of what Demolition had earlier in the night. Demolition thrived on facing someone quick, fast, speed, kind of challenged them. Bravo does not want to be challenged. He's a fucking fat, lazy sloth. He doesn't want to be challenged. He just wants some guy that's going to fuck around and be slow like him. And it turned out that Duggan's that perfect guy. So I kind of thought that this match would be a good kind of match for Bravo. Somebody that's just as slow, plotting, strikes, fumbling around with, you know, boring headlocks and shit. And it still wasn't. It was still garbage. I gave the match a star and a half. I thought I could give it more, but I couldn't. But because I really felt. No, I said no. 1.5.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I mean, half a star.
Oh, thank you.
I looked at it wrong. Half a star.
Thank
sorry,
you. I've never been star. So offended by a half, 1.5 star match. It would have been for that.
No,
one.
I meant I'm sorry. I looked at it wrong. Half
Fuck.
A star. No, it was half a star. But because I was and maybe because I was offended that going in, I was kind of giving Bravo the benefit of the doubt here because I thought maybe he could thrive against somebody that is around his speed. So I thought maybe this wouldn't be a bad – maybe he could squeeze 2 stars out of this. But it wasn't even close. They're just – Duggan's not is not a seller and Bravo's not a carrier. It's just – Bravo's nothing. This pretty much proves –
Big, fat, useless slug.
He is a slug. And the other one is a French asshole. I would have been great if Trongard said that. Stop speaking French like an asshole. Anyway, John, this was just a mess. Half a star for me, half a star for him. Just Bravo's just useless. Duggan's pretty hot right now and maybe did the best he could, but Bravo's just a lazy slug.
Yeah, Duggan's charisma and the crowd are the only things to take out of this. Duggan's amazing how he could do so little and just get so much emotion from the crowd for his simple hose and the simple thumbs up and the USA is that's the only thing he's got going for him that carries him through this shit show. He did get a good lick on Frenchie with that 2x4 at the end.
French that was lick?
Yeah, French lick. Nice. I set you up for that one.
Yeah, that was a softball.
He's a piece of shit. All right, up next, we have our big tag team match featuring the fabulous Rougeau brothers taking on the Hart Foundation. The Rougeaus are all cocky smirks, as Fink notes they'll be relocating to the United States soon. Graham says they've been talking about it for a while. Big grudge match here. Random Rougeaus are the Chip and Dale of the Dirty F sign, which made me laugh. Random. No Jimmy Hart at ringside. Interesting, we get some stalling and shit-talking before Ray and Anvil get us started. Ray tries to work the arm and shows off for a bit. We get both teams tagging. Jacques one-ups Brett with a backflip, but Brett goes to a side headlock and then a hard back elbow to shut him up. The Rougeau is still on the floor, and some fans are making unsavory gestures their way. Jacques comes in with some strikes, but Brett blocks a sunset flip and tags Anvil, who slugs away. The Harts tag in and out and punish Jacques, focusing on the back, including a big Anvil bear hug. Jacques works free and takes down Anvil. We start to get some good heel cheating as they distract the ref and choke away Anvil. Anvil powers out and tags Brett, who rattles both R's together until he starts to batter Ray's back. The Rougeaus use a ref distraction to take over and start to double team and quick tag and keep Brett grounded and firmly in control. Brett grabs a tag, but the ref misses it. Rougeaus stay in control with some nice double team offense that really batters the back of the abs. And the Rougeaus are just so smarmy here, antagonizing Anvil and the fans as they beat on Brett. Jacques preens a bit while setting up for a monkey flip, but Brett blocks it with an atomic drop and makes a tag, but the ref misses it. We stay with the Rougeaus dominating. Brett finally escapes and makes a clear tag, and Anvil cleans house, tags Brett. They basically hit Demolition's finisher. Jacques makes a quick save for Ray, but just as the Harts hit the heart attack, the bell rings, but we find out it's Ray ringing it, not the timekeeper. Ray drags Jacques out of the ring as the Harts stomp around pissed off. Fink calls it a draw. Rod Trongart's pissed, says it's bullshit. Anvil wants 5 more minutes. We get nothing despite some teases. Fink tells us Pat Patterson informs him there are 3 minutes left and the match must restart. The Rougeaus argue with Pat. We come back and restart with Brett battering Jacques. The Rougeaus bail and we're just trying to eat up the final minutes if they can, but the Harts keep bringing the heavy artillery. Al says they should be going for pin covers, but I've forgotten about it as the bell sounds for the draw. Great heel finish to build heat, but I thought it would have been better if it ended with the fake bell, honestly, and just have the Rougeaus walk out and then maybe get countered out. That capped a rocking tag match. A lot of good shine. Top-notch heat segment. Real good chemistry. The fans are super into it. Fun stuff. The angle's good. I like everything about this. These teams are on the right side of the ledger now with the hearts as faces and the Rougeaux as heels. I went 3.5 on this, John. Tons of fun.
Yeah, the Rougeaux's great heel work. Underrated. Their run was a little too short. They had the crowd hating him, and even the announcers too. Unfortunately, Trongard was a little off because he kept confusing Jacques and Raymond. He couldn't get that together.
Right.
He kept calling them the wrong name, and there was a match with Jesse and Gorilla, and Gorilla was having the same problem, and Jesse's like, you know how you could tell Gorilla it's Raymond's got the mustache, and Jesse is the one made it simple, but Ron blew that one, and I think this was to kill a lot of time because a couple of the other matches were short, and usually the card is 10 matches, and this one was only 9, so mm-hmm. I guess this is the one that was needed to us to stretch it out for him. And but I like that after the fake ringing of the bell where the superstar was like goading the Rougeaux's, get back in there and fight, brother. They're gonna do it. I have faith in them. And Ron and Lord are like, nah, no way. They're pussies. They ain't going back in there. So I like that little that little twist, Scott.
All right. Now, as usual, guys, the draws are usually never even draws. Let's assume that it was supposed to be a 20-minute match, and mm-hmm. I think Fink said 20 minutes. Do you think they went over or under?
Just under, time? I'm going to say.
Under.
Over. 22:32.
Wow. Yeah, wow. It flew.
2.5 minutes over. Yeah, it did fly. To say what I was – continuing what I was saying earlier about the tag combinations, this was perfect. Obviously, they have a backstory, but these two teams – match up pretty well, whereas the Demolition of the Rockers also did, but for different reasons. Rockers were the underdogs, smaller speed guys. Demolition, the bigger brawlers, bigger power guys. The Hearts and the Rougeaux's are almost exactly similar. They both wrestle very much the same. A little bit more speed for the Rougeaux's, obviously. You know, Anvil's not a speed guy by any stretch. But the Rougeaux's aren't like the Rockers. They don't move at a brisk pace like Sean and Marty do. They're kind of a hybrid. They work a little bit of both. And I think that worked well for this match.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of glad that this was the draw and not the other match because I think that – I don't think Demolition Rockers for 20 minutes would have worked. I think the fact theirs was a little shorter worked for them. This one was better to tell the story. They have the backstory of Jimmy Hart. So it worked out better that this was the longer match. I just love watching the guys work. I mean, all four of them really get it and in a tag setting like that. And you're slowly starting to see – and you'll definitely see more of it when we get to 1989. Brett is definitely starting to show signs of a guy that can handle himself. Obviously, that was in their mind for eons. But on TV and on the house shows in the ring, you never totally – not saw it, but he worked well in his typical tag setting. But I feel like starting now and for the next, obviously couple of years, you really start to see Brett shine as a guy that can lead, because for years you always thought that Anvil was the veteran leader of the team because he looked older and everything, but it was evident that Brett was the general of the team, and now you really start to see it here. And I thought it was a great telling of the story. It also shows that the Hearts are in a funk, and mm-hmm. that's part of the storyline.
Yep,
that they're Jimmy Hart's, he's under their thumb, or they're under his thumb, I should say. And they're struggling. Like, man, they needed to win this match bad, and they didn't. The best they could do was a draw. And that's the battling that goes on, the storyline that you see out of the Hearts for the next 2 years, is the battling they're trying to do to stay on top in a very, very uber-competitive tag division. And that starts here. Well, it started at SummerSlam when they couldn't beat Demolition. Now it continues here where they should have beaten the Rougeaux's and struggle to get a draw. And you're going to see that out of them over the next year plus, that they're battling to get out of this funk that they're in. And kind of get – they don't want to get lost in the mix as this tag division gets red hot. So I thought it was great storytelling here, and I thought it was a good combination to have these two teams and the other two teams together and not mix them up. Not that the Rockers and Rougeaux's couldn't have a great match, but the Rougeaux's were involved in something psychologically with the Hearts here. So yep. A great match. Match of the night for me. I gave it 3.5. I'm sorry, I gave it 3. Just a scooch below the other match, the other one, I should say. Yeah, no, I meant to say just a scooch below the other match. But exceptional, absolutely exceptional.
All right. Time for our final match of the night as Jake the Snake Roberts takes on Ravishing Rick Rude. The blood feud rolls on. Interesting stip in place. Rude gets booed heartily as he is flying solo tonight. Jake comes out to a big pop. He has Cheryl with him for this one. And, of course, the stipulation, I believe, is that the match can only be won via DDT or Rude Awakening, correct? Did you guys like that stip?
Yes. I did like that stip, actually.
Yep. Yeah, that's what got me there, sure. That was an interesting twist.
All right. Rude booed heartily. Jake comes out to a big pop. He has Cheryl with him for this one. Rude goes to talk to Cheryl, and that gives Jake a chance to nail him and start to work the arm. Rod notes that Al thinks the DDT is more devastating of the two holds. Al talks about his own neck strength and size and how wrestlers build their necks to resist stuff like the Rude Awakening, but can't do anything to protect against the DDT. Rude goes to the eyes and starts to slug and stomp away. Rude takes a moment to stalk Cheryl. Jake comes out and drills him. Back inside, Rude gets an atomic drop, sending Snake to the floor. Rod tells us that there are no countouts on this one. Rude yanks Jake's arm to the post, slides back in to pose and gyrate. Rude goes to the eyes again, clamps on a chin lock, holding it on for a bit. Jake breaks free but eats a stiff knee on a charge to the corner. Al thinks it's a good time for the Rude Awakening, and right on cue, Rude tries for it, but Jake bites his hand to block it. Rude nails the back to stop any momentum. Jake makes a comeback and unloads with right hands and a hard stomach breaker. Jake buries a knee lift and dedicates what's coming next to his wife, but Rude blocks a DDT by hooking the rope. Al and Billy blame Cheryl for the distraction as we then see Rude's ass while Jake yanks on his tights. Jake hits a short clothesline. "I know it's nighttime, but I suppose the moon is out too," is one of the lines we hear on commentary. Rude blocks another DDT and then trips up Jake on a knee lift attempt. Rude gets in Cheryl's face and blocks a slap attempt and then goes back to Jake, but Jake floats over on a slam and hits the DDT for the win. Cheryl comes in and slaps Rude, and then Jake unleashes Damien. The crowd just loves the finish. Fun match at points. A little bit sluggish at times, too. It never really hit that hot run down the stretch. Jake's selling is absolutely on point. Rude's a great heel, but his offense is so limited, it just grinds these matches down. Fun finish. It's been an entertaining feud. And again, just still waiting for Rude to kind of make that leap and really showcase in these matches, because right now it just drags him down. It was a good stip, though, because both finishers can be hit kind of out of nowhere, especially the DDT. So it was, you know, it wasn't something that would feel contrived. I went 2.5 stars, John, on this.
This was the big payoff for the ones that we complained about, the WrestleMania 4 match, which had no heat to it. And was there WrestleFest, or was there another one too?
Yeah, did they fight at WrestleFest? They fought at WrestleFest. Yep.
Yeah, to another sluggish match. So obviously they were holding it back for this one. The stipulation was unique. I liked everything about it. The crowd was into it, and having Cheryl there, I think stepped their game up. Jake was a lot more intense, and Cheryl looked a lot like Tony Katane from the Whitesnake video. She was old. she was typical 80s that. She had the 80s frilly hair and the little the doomy skirt on or whatever. But the only quibble is like 3 or 4 times, like Jake almost slipped on a DDT and to involve the crowd, and there was really only the one time where Rude went for the Rude Awakening and Jake got out of it by the biting, but there really wasn't there should have been like multiple times where Rude was like setting it up where he had a chance to put the Rude Awakening on. So there was really only that one time where Jake was in trouble, but the friggin' ladies went bananas when Jake yanked Rude's tights and showed the full moon, brother. the friggin' crowd, the ladies were like screaming and getting get a little moist in the MSG. and one quibble after Jake put the snake on him and he held Rude up. Cheryl was too scared to slap him. She gave him she barely tapped him. I think Juliana could have given a harder slap there. she's obviously not experienced as a pro, but they should have took her backstage and said, "Hey, just lay one into me." But obviously, this is one of the first times where she had to the ring. She didn't have any experience with this sort of thing, but she definitely added a lot to the match and added to the intensity, Scotty.
I agree 100%. Your match time was a pretty good 12:24. I actually gave it 3 stars. I really love this match. I think finally, and it had nothing to do with wins or losses. Jake winning was deserved. I mean, it made logical sense to win for him to win the feud. What I really liked about it was finally they seemed kind of comfortable telling a story in the ring. I feel like because they couldn't, that the other matches seemed very choppy, and that's why they always didn't look as good as they should have. This one, I feel like because we were going to get a definitive end, I know they do wrestle later in the month, but I feel like they finally were able to really tell the beginning-to-end story here, and that's why it was so great. I thought it was a good. Jake sold like a son of a bitch, just back and forth, and Cheryl with the doomy skirt on. You know, at some honky tonk bar, probably not wearing any panties. And her presence actually did add a great amount of intrigue.
Yeah, well, the whole feud's been about it, so it made sense for sure to have her out there.
No, absolutely. So I enjoyed it a lot. I think finally Rude and Jake were finally comfortable enough to be able to really – and I feel like we haven't seen a lot of Jake, right? You know, like at least for us maybe –
Oh, yeah, we haven't seen him in how many months? Since Mania till last month, right, or whatever? It was like,
yeah.
Between injuries and I think it was supposed to a little tests that came up the wrong way. He had a lot of issues. So.
He didn't have enough money to pay for the kids to piss in it. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Scott. One more thing I forgot to mention that Fink said led to the ring by the Brain, but the Brain must have left early because he wasn't there. And as a matter of fact, Fink was like all pissed because after he said it, he noticed that Rude was there alone, and you could tell Fink was like pissed. Like, why didn't just somebody tell me that he fucking wasn't there? Because Fink made a big lead to the ring by Bobby the Brain, and he wasn't even there. So.
I know. Very strange, actually.
Yeah.
Because he did the interview with Rude.
Right.
That made it even weirder. But yeah, anyway, I really thought this was a much, it ended up being a much better match than I thought because of the history we've seen so far from these guys that they hadn't been able to get comfortable in their skin in their matches. And I really feel like here they did. So kudos to Jake and Rude for finally being able to. And I think it's bigger for Rude because as you and I have talked about, JR, on the house shows, it felt like it was taking him forever to be the Rude that we thought we remembered, right? And now here we are, and he's actually starting to settle in a little bit. And I think Jake kind of helped him out there. So kudos all around everybody to Jake, to both to his wife and to Rude. Mm-hmm. Everything worked here. I almost think I'm almost kind of glad Bobby wasn't there.
Yeah,
I think Rude needed to kind of be out there in the deep end of the pool.
He still needs to. And he just needs to really figure out his weaponry on offense. I mean, it's been a year now, and it's still kind of the same. Like we still haven't seen him really surpass, in my eyes anyway, this 2.5 Ledger. Despite some pretty hot feuds and some good opponents, like a Steamboat, like a Jake, you know, we've seen.
There was a moment, even in this match, where it was real hot, and then Rude went to his typical chin lock and slowed shit down for a couple of minutes.
And I also fucking hate that top rope fist drop. It looks so fucking awkward.
Yeah. That one ain't going away.
I don't understand. Like I don't know. He lands on his feet. I don't understand how he gets any momentum, even you know, kayfabe, to actually hit it. I hate.
That's just an excuse so he could show off his so he could drop his tights. That's just
exactly
he can get up there and drop his tights.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's terrible. I absolutely hate that. It's one of the few things in Rude's repertoire that I absolutely cannot stand.
But he did have one of his great intros to all you fat ugly inner city sweat hogs, which he was probably looking at me.
Well, and this feud actually, you know, it seems like it ends here at least, but it's not done yet. We'll see it again actually on our next episode, and then continue into the pay per view as well. So, not quite done with these two, but for MSG, you get the big stiff blow off. So, all right, why don't we get to our awards to wrap this thing up here tonight? So, we will start with match of the night. I had Hearts Rougeau's as my choice.
I'm going Jake Rude.
I'm going Rockers Demolition.
All right. Hang on. I got to type all this out then. We got three different.
Sorry.
That's rare.
Yeah, well, you didn't really have that one that really stood out. They were all kind of on the same plane. I mean, I think either are, you know, fine choices. All right, worst match of the night to me, pretty easy choice on this one, and that was Roma versus Danny Davis.
Yep.
Yeah, although that Bravo Duggan match.
Oh, yeah, that one. But at least they had the heat behind it. I mean, Roma Davis is more. All right, my usual choice for MVP is not my choice tonight. I did not go Andre. I thought this was one of his weaker performances of the year, and it was still pretty good. I went through Rougeau's. I thought they were great in their promo. I loved, you know, they were great in the match. Like, just everything about them really stood out tonight. The promo was so good, and they've been awesome in the ring in this role. So I wanted to give them a little shine on a night where Andre was a bit down, Savage was a bit down. I thought the Rougeau's really stood out for me.
Who do you like, John? I'm a little conflicted.
I'm gonna go Jake. The crowd was just dying for that DDT, and he teased it a few times, and then he finally delivered it on what the crowd wanted, and he delivered in an excellent fashion. I'm going with Jake.
I'm gonna go with an upset pick here, just for this night, for his moment in the sun. I'm gonna give it to Hercules.
It's not a bad choice, honestly.
I think he shined in that one match, and I think he looked really good just tonight. Yeah. There was other great. I love both your guys' choices. Rougeau's were great. Jake was great. Rude was great.
It was a good varied
Rockers man. Demolition.
Yeah. It was a good varied. Yeah. Things are varied up, so it was kind of cool to see. It wasn't the same same players. We got to see some different guys get some shine. So I think that shows here three guys that never win MVP.
The crowd definitely went banana for Herc.
Yep. So
okay. All right, Uncle
Sandy Beach Award.
soon to be. For now, it's the Uncle Elmer still for the worst scrub. Yeah. Do you want to change it? We can change it if you want. You want to go to the Sandy Beach?
I don't know. Are we ever gonna? Is he ever gonna? Is Sandy Beach ever going?
Beach may have been worse than Elmer, honestly. So we can go with it. All right, it is now officially the Sandy Beach Award for the worst wrestler.
All right, here we go.
And Dino Bravo, as usual, for me on this one.
He's fucking horrible. He is absolutely fucking horrible. It's 3 times in 4 months, and are we really stunned? He'll just keep winning it because he's just terrible. He's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, Dino.
All right. Dino in there. All right, best moment, and this is where I actually gave the tip to Hercules. I went with the post-match when he had the sleeper, the full Nelson on Virgil and DiBiase. He's beating the shit out of him, and he won't let go. Like, that was the hottest stretch of the night for me, and that was my favorite moment.
Mine too.
I got to go with Jake finally landing the DDT.
Okay. A lot of typing in these awards tonight.
It's that kind of show. Man. We haven't had a show like this in a while.
I was a Jake Mack.
All right. Morocco award. Morocco's gone, so this thing is going to be up for anyone. I'm more with Hercules on this night, even more so than Bravo. I thought he was just looking ripped for his big face run. So to me, he gets this award.
Bravo.
I'm going to give it to Herc. Bravo's big, but he's fucking bloated. Herc is fucking shredded with his fucking little tiny waist. Fucking Bravo's looks like he ate fucking Frenchie.
They're both bad, but I thought Herc just looked a little bit more peaked tonight. But it's going to be interesting with Morocco gone now. It's a wide open field for these guys. All right. We got the final one is a Patera Award for the worst hair. Kenny was not in the house tonight. I know you mentioned Trongo earlier. I actually went Rick Rude. I thought his fucking perm mullet thing was looking awful tonight. I was not digging it at all. He was my choice on this evening.
If I can vote for it, I got to go with Trongard's hair hat. It was just so perfectly coiffed that if somebody lit a match near it, I think we'd have a fire hazard. I think John would be jumping through the window or something.
I think it's a tie between Coco and Cheryl.
Cheryl.
All right, pick one of the two. I'm not typing this. So.
Nah, Coco. And the explanation will be coming in the Survivor Series.
All right. Final grades, which for some reason I don't have marked down from last week. I don't remember what they were. I had mine in there. I don't have you guys in there.
I think I gave a 5.
Do you remember, John, at all what you gave? I feel like you gave a 5.5, John. Do you remember?
Yeah, 5.5.
All right, tonight. I went same. I thought this show was just about on par as last month. You know, the Hogan Andre was a step behind, but I thought the tag matches this month were better. So again, kind of balanced out. I enjoyed it about the same. Crowd was about the same. So I went 5.5.
I'm gonna go a half notch up. I gave last month's a 5. This show was better. More match. I think there were more. I mean, look, 2 threes and a 3.5 for me. So I'm gonna give this 5.5. I wanted to give it 6, but no, it's the Bravo and the garbage opener just doesn't get it quite there for me yet. So I'll give it a 5.5. Again, 2 threes and a 3.5 really make the show really heavy, but there was some stinkers in there to kind of balance it out. So 5.5 for me.
I'm going to go 6. That last match was special. It's not one that you've seen 1,000 times with the special stipulation, and the crowd finally got a nice payoff with the DDT. So I'm going to go 6.
Okay. All right. That'll put us in the books for another week. Fun episode, guys. Good to talk. We'll be back actually next week, Scott. We're not taking the week off this time around for our Halloween spooktacular. We'll keep that one a secret. Mm-hmm. Should be fun. Yep. I'm looking forward to it. And then in 2 weeks' time, Peter Winston will be back looking at the next Saturday Night's Main Event, which I believe is October of 88. So it's been a while since we have a Saturday Night's Main Event. Back in July was the last one we did. So we got to waste. It's been a waste since we've had that last
April.
One. Well,
April.
I mean, it was July of 2018.
Last time we recorded.
Yes, the last time we did a Saturday Night's Main Event on the show has been a few months. So we'll look forward to that as we ramp toward the end of 88. All right. So brand new Wrestling Warzone dropped last week. That was me and Chad looking at the go-home for Survivor Series 95 and then that corresponding Nitro, 11-13-95. You can check that out. Also, No Holds Barred episode number 8 dropped as Aaron and I continue to build our GWWE tag team list as a team. Be sure to peep that. Also, we started re-releasing From the Vault, Scott and John, Where the Big Boys Play. Of course, that originally ran on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, but we're going to rerun it here on the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed. So if you missed it or you want to relive it, they'll be here for you, fully archived going forward. Mm-hmm. So the first few are up on the feed.
Awesome.
Anything you want to plug, Scott?
Well, off week for Main Event. Last week we had a great episode. We talked some TNA news and the Saudi Arabia stuff. And so at some point later this week, we will have a poll up on the Main Event Facebook page. It's brother Nate Milton's turn to choose what our next New Japan Classic match pick is. So be sure to check the Facebook page and see what two matches he chooses for you great listeners to vote on. So stay tuned for that this week on the Facebook page.
All right. And John, you actually got shit to plug these days. Go ahead.
Yes, me and Brother Cowboy are going to be back at it this week in the NFL. We don't take weeks off, brother. We're going to be back at it, breaking some balls about my shitty Giants, et cetera. So, and also Wednesday morning. There's a lot of work here. I'm going to have to do a Wednesday AMQB. Check it out every Wednesday.
And check out all the other written pieces at PlayStation.com, the rebooted WWE Excellent Network Adventure. I love that crew that hits that up. They had a great new installment last week as well, so be sure to peep that. All kinds of content dropping each and every day, PlayStation.com. Of course, on our two feeds, PlayStation Pop and PlayStation Wrestling. You can subscribe to those on iTunes and catch all of the shows as well. Joel Barnhart had a 2018 World Series preview, so be sure to peep that before the series starts Tuesday night. Of course, the weekly WWE TV snapshot. It's usually a rotation of Matt Souza, Jennifer Smith, and Brian Bayless. They kind of give you a quick hit of the week that was on TV. I love it because it is not play-by-play. It's just them filtering through what worked, what didn't, the good, the bad, the ugly. So I really like that format. That drops usually on Friday or Saturday. And the adventure was a prime time from March 27th, 89. So that was a good read. And, of course, we have some GWE content dropping as well. Tyler Kelly continues his House of Fire series looking at various teams and has a really interesting take on the Shield and how to treat them in this project. So if you're doing the project, I behoove you to read that one. And also, just to throw back to last week, Stacey O'Loughlin presented her 15 SmackDown matches to see before you die. That was tied into the SmackDown 1000. So lots to see and do at PlayStation.com each and every day. PlayStation.com/Amazon, /Amazon. I've been corrected, by the way. Shop with us. And, of course, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all the shit. For Johnny, for Scott, I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you next week. A Halloween episode, Scott. Talk to you soon.
Spooktacular.
Starring Sandy Beach.
Oh, baby, I love you. We saw Elm
Street, and man, it was ghoulish.
Ghoulish kind of love. Right when we left, but when I got home and laid down to sleep, that began the nightmare, but on my street. It was burning in
in my room like an oven. My bed soaked with sweat, and man, I was bugging. I checked the clock, it had stopped at 12:30. It had melted, it was so darn hot, and I was thirsty. I went downstairs to grab some juice or a coke, flipped the TV off, and then I almost choked when I heard this awful voice coming from behind. It said, man, I ain't even wait to see who it was. Broke outside in my drawers and screamed so long, cuz got halfway up the block, I calmed down and stopped screaming. Then thought, oh, I get it, I must be dreaming. I strolled back home with a grin on my grill. I figured since this is a dream, I might as well get ill. I walked in the house, the big bad Fresh Prince, but Freddy killed all that noise real quick. He grabbed me by my neck and said,
here's my bill. We got a lot of work here, me and you. The souls of your friends, you and I will claim.
I said, yo, Fred, I think you got me all wrong. I ain't partners with nobody with nails that long. Look, I'll be honest, man, this team won't work. The girls won't be on you, Fred, your face is all burned. I pat him on the shoulder, said, thanks for stopping by. Then I opened up the door and said, take care, guy. He got mad, drew back his arm and slashed my shirt. I laughed at first and thought, hold up, that hurt. It wasn't a dream, man, this guy was for real. I said, Freddy, it's been an awful mistake here. No further words, and then I darted upstairs. Crashed through my door, then jumped on my bed. Pulled the covers up over my head. Said, oh, please do something with Fred. He jumped on my bed, but threw the covers with his claws. Tried to get me, but my alarm went off, and then silence. It was a whole new day, I thought. I wasn't scared of him anyway, until I noticed those rips in my sheets, and that was proof that there had been a nightmare on my street. Oh man, I gotta call Jeff. I gotta call Jeff. Come on. Come on, Jeff, answer. Come on, man. Man, Jeff, wake up, Jeff, wake up.
What do you want?
Jeff, wake up, man. Listen to me, Jeff.
It's 3 o'clock.
Jeff,
in the
listen,
what
Jeff,
do you
would
want?
You listen to me? Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
Man.
Jeff, listen to me. Don't go to sleep, Jeff.
Jeff,
Jeff.